and strikes a huge gong. The J. Arthur Rank Organization presents an Ealing Studios Michael Balkan production. The credits appear in front of a vast and empty ocean. The waves rise and fall relentlessly. Jack Hawkins, Donald Sinden, In the Cruel Sea by Nicholas Montserrat. John Stratton, Stanley Baker, Liam Redmond, Meredith Edwards. Bruce Seton, John Warner, Barry Letts, Gerard Hines, Red Griffiths, Glyn Houston. Virginia McKenna, Meg Jenkins, June Thorburn, and Moira Lister. Screenplay by Eric Ambler, Director of Photography Gordon Dines, ARPS. Production Supervisor Hal Mason. Editor Peter Tanner. Assistant Director Norman Priggan. RADA Photography John R.F. Stewart, ARPS. Special Effects Sydney Pearson. Music by Alan Rawthorne. Played by the Philharmonia Orchestra. Conducted by Ernest Irving. Produced by Leslie Norman. Directed by Charles Friend.
This is a story of the Battle of the Atlantic. A story of an ocean. Two ships and a handful of men. The men are the heroes. The heroines are the ships. The only villain is the sea. The cruel sea. That man has made more cruel.
A harbour.
When the war came in 1939, the Navy took me out of the merchant service where I belong and put me in command of one of the new convoy escort vessels that were being built on the Clyde. She was a Flower-class corvette. Her name was Compass Rose.
Lieutenant Commander Erickson, wearing overalls over his naval uniform, walks on deck.
It was all very strange at first. But it wasn't the ship herself I was worrying about, so much as the men who were going to sail in her. Most of them had never been to sea before. As for the officers, I was the only professional seaman among them. The rest were amateurs.
Erickson enters a hut on the quay. Two men in uniform hurry eagerly forward and salute.
Reporting for Compass Rose.
The captain looks them up and down.
Which are you?
Dockhart, sir.
So you're Fenerby?
Yes, sir.
First ship?
Yes, sir. We've just come up from King Alfred.
Oh. How long were you trading there?
5 weeks, sir.
5 weeks? Oh. What was your job in peacetime?
Freelance journalist, sir.
Oh, what's the connection?
Done a bit of sailing, sir.
What about you?
Therapy.
I was working in a bank, sir.
Ever been to sea?
Only across to France, sir.
Erickson takes off his overalls.
Either of you married?
Yeah, I am, sir.
Oh. Well, you'd better have a look around the ship to begin with. The main body of the crew hasn't joined yet, but there'll be plenty for you to do. Where's all your gear?
At the station, sir.
You can pick that up later.
Lockhart and Ferriby salute and start to leave.
Oh, by the way, don't salute me indoors when I haven't got a cap on. I can't return it.
Sorry, sir.
That's all right. It's not vital, but you may as well get it right. When you've had a look round, report to the First Lieutenant. You'll find him somewhere on board.
First Lieutenant Bennett's on deck. He's steely-eyed.
Coxswain! Coxswain!
Sir, this man is smoking during working hours.
Yes, sir. Not working proper routine yet, sir.
Who says not?
I was going to leave it till we had 4 ships company aboard, sir.
That makes no difference. No smoking except during stand easy. Understood?
Aye, aye, sir.
Bennett spies Lockhart and Ferriby on a lower deck. They're peering around nervously. Bennett gives a grim-faced smile. The novices go below deck, Ferriby stumbling on the steep steps. Lockhart looks around at the clutter.
I say, it's going to be pretty crowded here. You and I share a cabin, I suppose.
Hello!
Lockhart and Ferriby peer up the steps.
Hello there!
Bennett's at the top.
Yeah? What are you hiding down there for?
I'm not hiding.
Weren't you told to report to me?
After looking round the ship? Yes.
Sir!
Sir.
Now come up here and double up!
Ferriby's eyes are wide with fear as he follows Lockhart up the steps.
It's your job to find out where I am. Names?
Lockhart.
Ferriby.
So you've been around the ship? How many fire hose points are there?
14.
Very smart. What sort of gun have we got?
Bennett looks at Ferriby.
4-inch.
4-inch what? Breech loading, quick firing, Mark 4, Mark 6, fixed ammunition?
4-inch. I don't know.
Find out. I'll ask you the next time I see you. And now both of you get over to the dock office and start mustering the confidential books.
Yes, sir.
I'm the first lieutenant around here. And don't you forget it.
He glares. Lockhart and Ferriby quickly remember themselves and salute. Bennett returns the salute and goes on deck.
Bosun's mate!
Lockhart looks up at the steps thoughtfully.
I can see we're going to get on beautifully.
How did you know about the fire points?
I didn't. But I guess he didn't know either. Well, never mind. We volunteered for it.
I didn't expect the Navy to be that chap.
Perhaps the Navy didn't expect it either.
Hoist to attention! Left, right, left, right!
Seamen march through the town to the quay.
Ship's company. Halt! Left turn!
The seamen come on board the Compass Rose.
Hold on, up against the bulkhead.
What's this, the
oh,
end?
Oh, blimey, this is lovely, this
Who
is.
Who could beat the Black Hole of Calcutta?
Here, wrong shop, mate. This is the seamen's mess.
Oh, no, it ain't. We're all together in this gash boat.
Well, seamen and stokers messing together.
The stokers don't like it any more than you do. And there's no canteen.
Oh, this is going to be lovely, I can see. I'll soon be in the cooler.
Why don't you ask the skipper? They'll fix it for you. Aha, here, that cooler's mine.
Compass Rose, shot! Light the sail.
On deck, the flag's hoisted. Later that night, a seaman calls out instructions.
Hands to station for leaving harbour. Special sea duty men close up.
Down in his cabin, the captain glances up as he hears hurried footsteps above. He checks his watch. Ferriby's on the bridge.
Bridge depth charge, can you hear me?
Ferriby! Why aren't you aft where you belong?
I was just going aft, sir.
Just going. Now listen, I've been watching you, sub. You've been marking time ever since I stopped you sleeping ashore when your wife was up here. Well, from now on, you're going to jump. And don't you forget it. I ever catch you skulking about.
Bridge? Bridge, sir?
Is the first lieutenant up here?
Yes, sir.
Ask him to come down to my cabin.
He replaces the speaking tube as a burly man, Watts, comes in.
Engine's ready, sir.
Oh, very good, Chief.
About the revs,
Yes, the builders say slow ahead 35, half ahead 100. I think we'd better try that to start with.
Aye, sir.
And if I ring down Fuller Stone twice, it means only you can save me.
I remember that, sir. I wonder if we'll ever see action in our... My paper says it'll be all over by Easter.
You want it, Mason?
Yes.
Are we ready to move, number one?
Yes, sir, any time you like.
Well, it's your job to come and tell me. I can't guess at it, you know. Are all hands aboard?
I think so, sir.
Well, are they or aren't they?
I'll find out. I'll detail Ferriby to check up.
You won't detail anyone. Unless you want to change jobs with them.
Report to me on the bridge when ready for sea.
All right, sir.
The captain's on the bridge. He has rugged features with heavy brows.
Let go aft! Let go!
Ferriby stands watching nervously as the seamen wearing waterproof coats hoist on a rope.
Key 49, hoist!
A line of three flags are hoisted. Ferriby shouts out.
All clear aft!
Slow ahead.
Slow ahead.
Slow ahead, sir.
A seaman pushes a lever. Down in the engine room, Watts turns a wheel, starting up a heavy line of pistons. The Compass Rose, with a large white K-49 painted on her hull, leaves the port. People shout out and wave from the quayside.
Good luck to you, Compass Rose!
The Ferriby, still on deck, checks to see if any of the crew are watching him, then does a half-wave, half-salute to the cheering people on the quay. A seaman stops what he's doing and waves to the crowd.
At Greenock, we ammunitioned and stored. Compass Rose passed her sea trials, and I took her over from the builders. Then we went north for our working up exercises. The 3 weeks of training, which had to be enough to turn a raw collection of men into an effective fighting unit.
The anchor's weighed.
Anti-submarine detector, ASDIC for short. A device under the ship here sends a series of sound impulses out through the water, like this.
The seamen look up from their desks as the trainer draws on a blackboard.
Bing! Bing! Right. Now, if there's nothing within range, there's no echo. But if there is something...
He draws a little submarine.
You hear the impulses echoing back from it, like this.
Bing! Bing! Bing!
Ah, you say, we found a U-boat. Oh, have you? That echo may also be a submerged wreck, a shoal of fish, an eddy of water, or the empties the wardroom steward has just chucked overboard. How do you tell the difference? Well, it's just a matter of practice. Lots and lots of lovely practice. Ah, once again.
Bing! Bing!
Stop that laughing.
A seaman operates the real thing, Lockhart watching.
Bearing drawing left, sir.
Bearing still drawing left, sir.
Steer 340.
Range 400, bearing steady. No, it isn't. Watch it.
He returns to the ASDIC.
Right, cut off. Green 4-0, sir.
Sorry. Bearing drawing right, green 4-0.
That's better.
Stand by, throwers.
And drop a grenade. We'll get her exact position this time.
Ferriby's on deck.
Stand by.
Instantaneous echo, sir.
Fire one grenade.
Ferriby unhooks a grenade from his belt, pulls out the pin and throws it out into the sea. From the bridge, Bennett spots a trail of smoke.
Submarine smoke candle, sir.
Erickson, Bennett, a seaman, and Tallow watch. Tallow.
From submarine, sir. You're getting too good. Go away and try it on the German.
Yes. You won't find them nearly so obliging.
Tallow turns away unamused. That evening, the officers sit down at a table. Bennett, Lockhart, and Ferriby are served sausages. Bennett tosses down his newspaper and grabs the dish of potatoes.
Snorkers. Good-o.
Lockhart and Ferriby exchange uncomfortable glances as Bennett serves himself.
Here's the wardroom, sir.
Thank you.
A young officer enters. Bennett looks up.
What's this? Visitors?
My name's Morell, sir. I'm joining the ship.
Ah, a new sub at last, eh? Extra for watchkeeping duties. You should have been here 3 weeks ago. Been taking your time, haven't you?
I only left King Alfred on Tuesday. I've been travelling ever since, sir.
Another one still wet behind the ears, eh? That's fine. What were you in Civvy Street?
I was a barrister.
A lawyer, eh? That's all we needed. Well, you better sit down and have some snorkers before they're curled. Coslick! By the way, this is Lockhart, this is Ferriby.
How do you do?
Sir, another officer for lunch.
Aye, aye, sir.
And I'm the first lieutenant.
Officer of the day wanted, sir.
Okay.
Bennett heads out.
I do all the work around here.
Lockhart stands to greet Morell.
Very glad to see you. Hang your coat up out there. I expect you'd like a drink, wouldn't you?
What? Oh, I'll get it. Gin?
Beer, please.
Welcome to Compass Rose.
Thank you. He sounds a very experienced officer, the first lieutenant.
Very. Until 4 months ago, he was a second-hand car salesman.
Ah, I see.
We were hoping you'd get here for the working up exercises.
Thank you. Oh, I shall have to try and catch up with you. What was it like?
Oh, 3 weeks of purgatory. We don't really know. We haven't come out of the ether yet. The skipper's ashore with the Admiral now. What about your gear?
It's outside. Tell me, do we often have these sausages?
Frequently. The First Lieutenant's very fond of them.
Snorkers, good-o.
I see. Now, whether this war is long or short, it's going to seem long, don't you think? Cheers.
Erickson reads.
Commander-in-Chief, Western Approaches to Compass Rose. Being in Orange ready for sea, you will sail to join convoy AK-14, leaving Liverpool Bar light vessel at 1200A, 6th of February, 1940.
He looks down the table at his officers.
Acknowledge.
This is sailing with a convoy of other ships. Captain Erickson, Bennett, and some other officers stand on the bridge with binoculars. Each ship has a trail of grey smoke coming from its funnel. Ferriby's also on deck looking out excitedly. Lockhart joins him.
This is more like it, eh?
Signal from Viper, sir. Organization of convoy as follows.
And so we went to war. The Atlantic is a very big ocean, and in winter weather, the finest hiding place in the world. The U-boats were there all right, but not many of them. And at that stage, they were mostly depending on luck for a kill. Before the fall of France, convoy after convoy sailed without meeting one. But U-boats weren't the only enemy we had to contend with.
The Compass Rose crashes through the waves of a storm-tossed sea. Her decks are awash. The captain stands on the bridge with Ferriby. He glances over at the young officer, who squints miserably ahead as another wave drenches them. Morell's in his cabin as the ship rocks. A framed photograph of a woman falls from a shelf onto the floor. Morell picks it up and puts it back. The ship lurches and he's thrown back onto his bunk. In the Azdic room, the operator's at the controls, turning the wheel which sends out the sonar signals. Beside him, Bennett's asleep in his seat, a cigarette hanging from his lips. In his bunk, Morell wakes up. He looks at his watch and climbs down. The ship tips and he falls onto the floor of the cabin, which is an inch deep in water. On the bridge, Erickson greets a seaman who's struggling to walk on the heaving deck.
Getting tired of it?
A bit, sir. Only she keeps still just for a minute or so.
Well, at least we're dry. We'd know all about it if we had to turn round and steam into it.
Yes, sir.
Message from Ypres, sir. Roundup number 86. Who still appears to be sailing astern of the convoy?
Very good. I spoke too soon. Pass the word. We're going to turn beam on.
Down in the galley, some seamen, some wearing vests, are eating. A steward pours tea from a large metal teapot, and the cook ladles out soup from an enormous steaming pot. The Compass Rose turns. Her prow is almost totally submerged by the powerful waves. On the bridge, the officers hunch forward against the blast of spray. In the galley, the men are thrown over the tables. The galley is now ankle-deep in water. A torrent pours in over the stove and the men round it. Bennett's in the officer's cabin reading a newspaper. Water pours down on him. He gets up in disgust. It's dark. A figure struggles onto the bridge holding a mug.
Who is it?
Coxswain, sir.
Come up to see the fun?
That is for a bit of air, sir. Brought you some tea. It's got a ton of rum in it.
Thanks, coxswain. I appreciate that.
The officer drinks.
What's it like below?
All proper pop mess, sir. Some of the lads are wishing they'd join the army instead.
Keep her up, helmsman. You're 12 degrees off course.
Aye, aye, sir. You've spot a leave soon, officer.
It's daylight and the sea is calm. The Compass Rose arrives at Liverpool docks. She glides slowly in past the cranes along the quayside. Later, she's docked. In the officer's cabin, Lockhart sits reading a book and listening to the radio.
Here is the news. German motorized units yesterday continued their push in the vicinity of Le Cateau and St. Quentin. In air combats near Dunkirk, the RAF destroyed at least 22 enemy aircraft without
a
loss
to
themselves.
The captain comes in.
Anyone in?
Hello, sir.
My wife's busy on a war job during the day, so there's nobody at home. I thought I'd just look in and have a drink with you.
Gin, sir?
Thanks. Plain. Well, how's everything going?
All right, sir, I think. We'll be finished boiler cleaning by Friday. Oh, one of the radio location boys turned up.
Well, when do we get it?
Not I hope yet, I'm afraid. Everybody's after it. RAF, Army, the lot.
With corvettes at the end of the queue, I suppose. Thanks. Well, I expect you're finding it pretty boring here, aren't you?
I had nowhere particular to go on leave.
What, no ties with the shore?
None that have stood the test of time.
Well, it'll be your turn next anyway. What are you reading?
A first aid manual.
Oh, yes. I've applied first attendant. Not that we'll get one yet, of course, but there's no harm in trying. It looks as though things are warming up. I suppose a couple of years ago, you would never have thought that this could happen.
couple of years ago, sir, my only sea experience was mucking about in a 5-ton yawl in the Solent. Quite a pretty boat she was.
How big a crew?
She was quite pretty, too.
What's the food been like with the cooks on leave?
Greatly improved, sir.
Well, in that case, I think I'll stay to lunch.
Looks thoughtful as he fills his pipe from a leather tobacco pouch. Ferriby's flicking through a magazine. He shows it to Morell.
I say, John, there's a picture of your wife here.
Is that?
She's posing in a swimsuit.
Oh, yes.
Doris and I saw the show the night before last.
You should have let me know you were going. I would have got you some free seats.
Oh, we didn't want to bother you on leave. It must give you a funny feeling to see your wife's picture all over the place.
Lockhart seems uncomfortable.
All I can ever see in the paper these days is Dunkirk. Did you read that?
Bennett arrives.
Well, well, well. Good little boys. All back from leave at the proper time. How'd you manage to drag yourselves away, eh?
He throws his cap across the room and rummages in the drinks cabinet. The others stare at each other, tight-lipped. Bennett turns to them.
Making one of so-and-so's, aren't you? What's been happening when I've been away?
Nothing at all.
I suppose you were slipping ashore the whole time.
He takes a drink.
As for you married men, you had a wonderful time, don't tell me.
Well, yes, it was very nice.
I bet it was. I bet you left a bun in the oven, both of you.
He rushes out, doubled over. Morell jumps to his feet.
Why doesn't the captain get rid of him?
It's not so easy in wartime.
Well, can we get rid of him somehow?
Nobody can.
Are you sure? He didn't like that last convoy at all.
Who did?
Ah, but I think he's the worrying type. Might even get a duodenal ulcer. That's the classical complaint.
The Navy takes them very seriously.
Why?
Well, in case something blows up while you're at sea.
Well, one of us had better tell him. Well, I wouldn't want him to be in any doubt as to how to go about it, just for want of a friendly word of advice.
Dinner.
I saw some newsreel stuff of Dunkirk the other night. There was an old BMW destroyer simply packed with troops.
Yes. You could see someone was trying to make them smile at the camera, too. They didn't look as if they wanted too much.
Well, at least they're all...
Stomach.
That hurt.
Oh, what's the matter?
Terrible pain.
Oh, you've
better go and lie down. Take it easy for a bit.
It's agony.
Perhaps you have a bun in the oven.
Lockhart and Ferriby try to hide their smiles.
Yes, perhaps I had better lie down for a bit, sir. Maybe it'll pass off.
The captain watches Bennett go.
Well, bad luck.
Most moving. I imagine there's nothing we can do to help him.
Well, what are you all grinning at?
Sorry, I was thinking of something.
How does you credit Lockhart at a time like this? When the first lieutenant's in pain, I shouldn't have thought you'd be able to laugh at anything else.
Ericsson and the other ship's commanders are briefed.
From then on, they'll proceed independently. You'll pick up the homeward-bound convoy R-20 at a rendezvous off Iceland, which will be signaled later. All clear?
Yes, sir.
And I must tell you that according to intelligence, the Germans have captured the port of Brest more or less intact. That, I'm afraid, will greatly increase the number of U-boats operating, as well as their range. From now on, you'll have to expect enemy activity.
Lockhart comes to the captain's cabin.
Come in. You wanted me, sir?
Yes, I've just had a signal from the PMO at the Naval Hospital. The first lieutenant won't be back for some time. He's got a suspected duodenal ulcer.
Oh. Oh.
Exactly. We sail this afternoon, we'll have to go without him. We haven't a chance of getting a relief by then, either. You're the senior, sir. You'll have to take over as first lieutenant.
Lockhart swallows hard.
Yes, sir.
I'll help you as much as I can, of course. You should be able to carry on until a relief arrives.
I can carry on anyway, sir.
Do you think so?
Yes, sir.
The captain stares at Lockhart.
Well, I'll see. Now, as we're short-handed, I suggest we reorganize the watches like this.
The sea and sky are dark, apart from a glimmer of light on the horizon lighting the convoy of ships. Morell's on the bridge.
What's it like below tonight?
Warm enough, sir. The bulkheads are sweating a bit, though.
Yes, I expect they...
Lights flicker from an explosion some way off. Morell sounds the alarm. Down below, the seamen scramble into their clothes. They race up the ladder-like steps to the deck. The captain appears beside Morel on the bridge. He peers through binoculars.
Ship on fire, bearing red to Oz, sir.
The coxswain, Tallow, arrives.
Coxswain at the wheel, sir. Course 160. Watch that telegraph now. Right.
Guns crew closed up, sir. Action, steaming stations.
Full ahead.
Full ahead, sir.
Starboard 50.
Starboard 15, sir.
Sweep from green 050 to green 120.
Sweep from green 050 to green 120, sir.
Lockhart's with the ASDIC operator. Ferriby hurries on deck.
Closed up, sir. Right. Clear away charges and set one baton B for Baker.
He stares out to sea. Another explosion. Ferriby's pale face is lit for a second in the glare. He searches the now dark horizon, a seaman behind him.
Must have been ammunition. Didn't know much about it anyhow. Best way to die if you got to.
The captain on the bridge.
Midships!
He turns round as there's a third explosion behind them.
Wheel midships, sir.
Starboard 20.
Starboard 20, sir.
He stares at the burning ship and sees members of its crew jumping overboard. The captain looks through his binoculars, then goes to the speaking tube.
Bridge depth charge! Ferriby, sir!
We're going to drop a boat, sir. Who's your leading hand?
Tunbridge, sir! Right, tell him to take four men from the pom-pom and pull towards that ship. Tell him to stay clear until she goes under, then pick up survivors.
We'll come back for him after we've had a look for the U-boat.
Sir! Quick as you can, sir!
Aye, aye, sir! Tunbridge! Boat's crew! Four men!
Tunbridge and four men row towards the burning ship.
She's going!
Pause!
They stop rowing and turn their faces towards the wreck. Tunbridge, a young man, watches transfixed, his face lit by the flames. The light flickers, then dies, and his face is in darkness.
Give way together!
What's that? Filthy stink.
Oil fuel, chunk.
Quiet there.
A man struggles in the water.
Easy, all. Oars. Our water, starboard. Grab hold of the oar, mate. Bear a hand. Get a rope around him. It's all right, mate. We've got you. It's all right, mate.
They pull the man into the boat. Later, the survivors are on the Compass Rose, some sitting wrapped in blankets, some lying down, badly burned. Lockhart's tending to one of them, the injured man's coughing blood. Lockhart looks from the injured man to Tallow next to him and gives a little shake of his head. Tallow nods in agreement.
Reckon so, sir. It's the oil in his lungs. This one's got a bad gash. Ship is sewn up. Yes.
Lockhart moves on to the next man. He pulls aside the temporary dressing on the wound.
It's all right, old chap.
Lockhart stares around for a moment uncertain, then he addresses the seaman behind him.
Give me a sterile needle.
Later, Lockhart climbs wearily up on deck. He pauses for a moment and closes his eyes, inhaling the fresh air. His hair is uncombed and the breeze tugs at it so it flops over his forehead. He's unshaven. He stares out at the grey sea, then makes his way onto the bridge where the captain stands looking out.
Morning, sir.
Morning, number one. You look as though you've been busy. What's the score down there?
Two dead. One more to go, I think. 11 others, they'll be all right. How about things up here?
We lost another ship over on the other side of the convoy.
Quite a night. Do you want to turn in so I can finish this watch?
No, no, no. You get some sleep. I'll wait for Ferriby and Morel.
Tunbridge did well.
Yeah. So did you, number one.
The captain turns away and looks out to sea.
It's pretty rough, most of it. I must find out more about dressing wounds. It's going to come in handy if this sort of thing goes on.
I don't see why it shouldn't. No reason at all, as far as I can see. We sailed on 11 convoys that year, and all the time the enemy grew stronger. It was like a stain spreading over the sea, poisoning it mile by mile. For us, the Battle of the Atlantic was becoming a private war. If you were in it, you knew all about it. You knew how to keep watch on filthy nights, and how to go without sleep. How to bury the dead, and how to die without wasting anyone's time.
A bell clangs on a buoy.
You learned as well how to look forward to the occasional blessing of a refit.
Two men from the Compass Rose, Tallow and Watts, walk along a wide street lined with terraced brick houses. They're both in naval uniform. The cranes from the docks rise above the rooftops. Tallow takes out a latchkey and opens a front door. They go in. Tallow whistles a hello. A plump woman bustles into the hall.
Bob!
Lad.
How long have you got? Weekend?
Not this time. Spot a real leave. Refitting in our home port.
What a bit of luck.
Oh, I'm sorry. Brought a friend, lad. This is Chief E.R.A. Watts. Same ship. Jim, it's my sister.
Pleased to meet you. Have you had your tea?
When I can get your cooking, just by crossing the river. Not likely.
Get on with you. Oh, the kitchen's not fit to be seen. Come on in the front. I don't hardly ever use it now because of the blackout. Can't be bothered to fix up the curtains. Sit you down.
Go on, Jim.
What's this about a refit, Bob? I thought you had to be there for that.
Now, this is different. Some new kind of radio gadget they're putting on.
Radio? But you don't need a refit for that, do you?
No. You should see all the gear those professors have got with them.
It's very hush-hush, Miss Tallow.
Oh, there now, Bob. You haven't introduced us properly.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Mrs. Arthur Bell, Jim. Only poor old Arthur's dead. So if I were you, I'd call her glad, the same as I do. He's a widower, Jim is. Always talking about settling down again.
Oh, that's enough of that, Bob. Doesn't care what he says, Mr. Watts. Always cheeky. How was the trip?
Enough said.
I will expect you could do with a bit of a rest.
We do with a pint anyway. What about it, Glad? Anything in the old larder?
Well, you know where to find it.
Close all watertight doors and prepare to take in tow.
Tallow goes out to the kitchen. Glad smiles shyly at Watts, then fetches a glass from the sideboard.
What about submarines?
I reckon we're the submarines most of the time, Mrs. Bell. Never seem to get our heads above water for days on end.
Oh, go on with you, Mr. Watts. You're as bad as Bob.
There we are. All ripe and lovely.
Oh, nothing hush-hush about you, is there? Well, I think if you don't mind, I'll join you.
The Compass Rose is sailing with a convoy.
The summer came again. The summer of 1941. Lockhart was confirmed as my number one, and another officer, Baker, joined the ship to bring us up to strength. It was then that we went on the Gibraltar.
Forward of the mast hangs a lantern, which houses the aerial for the radar. Down below, a seaman watches a small round radar screen.
That one's Viperous, isn't it?
Should be, sir.
Well, if she changes station, let the bridge know.
Aye, aye, sir.
On the bridge.
They used to charge a guinea a day for this before the war. Gibraltar and back, £11 all in.
Yeah, but only an inside cabin for that price. I wish it wasn't so clear. This sort of weather's no good to our side.
Masthead bridge. Sound of aircraft aboard, sir.
Action stations.
The captain and Lockhart peer up at the sky.
Coxswain at the wheel, sir.
There it is.
Depth charge crew closed up, sir.
Looks like a fuck wolf reconnaissance.
The corvette's anti-aircraft gun is positioned.
On target.
Out of range. Encircling.
Signal from Viperous, sir. To all escorts, close up!
Pull ahead,
sir.
It's too easy. All it's got to do is to fly around in circles just out of range, sending out our position and changes of course.
And every U-boat within 100 miles steers straight for us.
Dark clouds hang over the ocean, the sun's rays breaking through the gap, scattering sparkling lights on the water. A ship on the horizon explodes. It's dark. Lockhart is with the ASDIC operator.
No echo, sir.
Bridge, sir. No contact.
Port 10.
The sky's filled with a blinding white light as more ships are hit. Out on the water, a wreckage burns. It's daytime. The officers stand on the bridge, scanning the sea through their binoculars. Down below, the wounded are tended to. A Red Cross worker wraps a bandage around a seaman's head wound. A message is brought to Morel and the captain on the bridge. The captain's in his shirt sleeves, smoking a cigarette.
Signal commandment, immediate, sir.
There are indications of 5 U-boats in your area with others joining. Well, it's nice of them to let us know.
Yes, sir.
Real film footage shows black smoke billowing from a ship. Rescued seamen are in a longboat. They come alongside a vet and clamber up the ropes with difficulty. On board the Compass Rose, Lockhart covers the body of a dead man with a blanket. A seaman writes a record in a notebook. Lockhart moves to another body, only the bare feet showing under a tarpaulin. He pulls it back to reveal the face of a young man who looks about 16 years old. Later on the radar screen, the operator points something out.
Another one going, sir.
The illuminated arm on the screen sweeps round and round, lighting up 3 rows of small shapes, one of them breaking away from the others. Down in the hold, the small space is packed with seamen. Lockhart checks the arm of a rescued man.
You all right for swimming, eh?
Sure. But you won't be doing any more swimming on this trip.
You're dead right there. If anything happens to this lot, we're snugging our coffin already.
The captain's on the bridge.
Make to Viperous. Have 68 survivors aboard, including additions from Fort James, Eriske, and Bulstrode Manor sunk last night. Have amended. And what is it, Beggar?
Another immediate from Admiralty, sir.
There are now estimated to be 9 new boats in your area. They must be popular.
Yes, sir.
Nighttime, another ship burns. The survivors are in the water. A rowing boat picks them up. The captain and some others watch from the bridge of the Compass Rose.
We can't stop this time. Let's see, it's 10 miles away in this light.
The captain looks at the struggling men, then goes to the speaking tube.
Stop engine!
Down in the engine room, Watts nods to one of his crew.
Stop!
Stand by to get those survivors inboard. We won't lower a boat. Scrambling net. They can see us easily enough.
Aye, sir.
We don't want to waste any time, number one.
Ferriby watches anxiously. The seaman behind him watches too.
If we don't buy it now, Jerry doesn't deserve to win the war.
The Compass Rose is lit by the flames from the burning ship. The water laps against her hull, and down in the engine room, the heavy machinery is still. On all parts of the ship, the men wait, their faces tense, their eyes wide as they strain to listen for sounds of attack. The rowing boat knocks against the hull. The men start to struggle up the net, which has been let down from the deck. A seaman wipes a hand over his face anxiously and looks down at the survivors as they climb up. Down in the hold, a man silently crosses himself. The survivors continue to struggle up. In the engine room, Watts drags on a cigarette. His square face is shiny with sweat, and he looks up dubiously at the engine gauge, which is on stop. A couple more men clamber out of the rowing boat onto the net. The seamen above peer down impatiently.
Come on! Come on!
They finally make it onto the deck. A survivor collapses into the arms of one of the waiting crew.
Bless you for stopping.
The last man climbs up the net. Lockhart checks the rowing boat is empty, then waves up to the bridge. Down in the engine room, the crew are waiting.
Pull ahead!
The pistons start up. The man who crossed himself slowly lowers his head in relief. Down below, the survivors are wrapped in blankets with mugs of tea. Cigarettes are offered round.
You have one?
No, merci.
Baker and Morell are eating a meal at a table. Lockhart joins them.
Oh, yes.
News? From the Admiralty. There are now estimated to be 11 new boats in your area. Destroyers Lancelot and Liberal will join escort at approximately 0600.
I say, two L-class destroyers. That's grand. They're terrific ships.
They'd better be terrific. 11 new boats works out at one to each ship left in the convoy. I very much doubt whether their lordships really intended such a misbalance of forces. Getting rattled, John? Well, whatever we do, those damn U-boats seem to get through the screen every time. We lost almost half our convoy and an escort, and we're still 2 days away from Gibraltar. It's an odd thing to think that even if nothing else happens, this is probably the worst convoy in the history of sea warfare.
Something to tell your grandchildren?
Yes, indeed. In fact, if you can guarantee I will have grandchildren, I shall recover my spirits immediately.
But how can he guarantee you have grandchildren?
If they're as stupid as you are, I hope I don't have any.
Oh, I say.
It's a bright sunny day. On the bridge of the Compass Rose...
Destroyer reinforcement, sir. Liberal and Lancelot.
The two large destroyers cut majestically over the waves. On the Compass Rose, a seaman complains to the others.
Proper show-off. All very well for them to dash about like a couple of brand new pins on Chatham High Street. They haven't had the last week along of this lot.
A ship's hit, black smoke billows up.
Starboard 20, full ahead.
Starboard 20, sir.
Sweep from 220 to 280.
Sweep from 220 to 280, sir.
Midships.
Midships,
sir. Wheel midships. Steer 190.
Steer 190, sir.
Lockhart's with the Asdic operator.
Echo bearing 225, sir.
Echo bearing 225, moving.
Starboard 10.
Starboard 10, sir.
The Compass Rose turns.
Steer 220.
Steer 220, sir.
Lockhart.
Cut left, cut left.
Cut left, sir.
That's it. Target moving left fast, sir.
Bearing 200, sir.
Bearing 200, range 800.
Port 10, what's it look like, number one?
Submarine, sir. Can't be anything else.
Bearing 195, range 600.
Steer 190.
Steer 190, sir.
The captain peers into a sextant and scans the surface of the ocean ahead. Through the triangular viewfinder, he sees a number of dark shapes moving around in the water.
Course 190, sir.
His heavy brows crease as he frowns.
What's it look like now, number one?
Clear and solid, sir. Slight Doppler. Must be a U-boat.
Still moving left?
Yes.
The captain stares at the shapes on the water.
There are some men in the water just about there.
Bearing 193, range 400.
What's it look like now?
Just the same. It's the firmest contact we've ever had.
There are some chaps in the water just there.
Well, there's a U-boat just underneath them.
Bearing 191, range 300.
The captain lowers his eyes, his lips tighten.
Attacking, stand by. Stand by!
The survivors in the water wave as the Compass Rose comes nearer. Their smoke-blackened faces light up. The captain stands rigid, his shoulders squared. Ferriby peers out at the waving men, his lip trembling in disbelief and fear. On the deck, the survivors from the other ships crane forward. As the prow of the Compass Rose crashes through the waves towards them, the survivors stop waving. They gasp as they struggle to swim out of the way. The captain glances down, waiting. Lockhart's face is locked in concentration, his upper lip shiny with sweat.
Range 200.
The pistons in the engine room pump furiously. The prow of the ship slices through the water. The survivors swim in desperation. The Asdic operator turns the wheel.
Range 100.
The compass rose is now alongside the survivors. One of the seamen leans down toward the men in the water. They wave back in confusion. The ship surges on, tossing them around in the slipstream. One man is sucked under the prow. Ferriby flinches and looks away, then turns back to look. The men in the water stare up as the ship passes. The captain stands motionless, his eyes narrowed and fixed on the horizon. Lockhart stares intently, his hand hovers over the warning button.
Instantaneous echo, sir!
Fire one!
Two depth charges shoot out from the compass rose. The men in the water gesture frantically as two more depth charges roll out from the stern of the ship. They try them away, floundering uselessly. The captain walks to the stern of the ship and looks out. Everyone crowds on deck watching in silence. One man turns his face away. Another screws up his face with rage and shouts across to the captain.
Bloody murderer!
The captain doesn't move, only his face contorts slightly. He returns to the bridge.
Starboard 20. Slow ahead.
Lost contact, sir.
Carry out lost contact procedure.
Seagulls flap and swoop over the scene of the explosion. Three crew members watch, their faces stunned. The island of Gibraltar, its rocky mountain peak rises above the city. It's dark, the compass rose is moored in the shadow of the rock. The captain's in his cabin, slumped in a chair, his feet up, a glass in his hand, smoking a cigarette.
Come in.
Three men in civilian clothes, jackets and ties come in.
Hello.
Good evening, Captain. We came back to thank you for our lives.
Oh. Didn't recognize you.
Sure, we bought clothes. Captain Rishi, Captain Jaslewski, I am Mortensen, Norwegian.
Oh. Well, come in and have a drink.
Thank you, no.
Thank you, yes. I wish to drink with this brave man who stopped his ship and gave me my life.
And me. Me, I have the same wish, much stronger. And for my wife, too, and my three children.
Huh. That's fine.
They all sit drinking. The captain stares at them a little dazed.
We know that you have much to think about.
Yes, I have been thinking.
Are you sad?
Yes, I am pretty sad.
The man in the water?
Yes.
The man you had to kill.
The man I had to kill.
It was necessary to do it.
Yes, it is war.
There is no blame.
But there may be thoughts.
Naturally, there will be thoughts.
And for thoughts, there is gin.
The man raises his glass and looks knowingly at the captain, who gives a pained smile.
Skål.
Skål.
He drinks, looking around like a haunted man. Lockhart's been on shore. He walks slowly and heavily along the quay and up the ramp onto the compass rose. A seaman salutes him as he climbs up onto the deck. He sees the captain standing alone on the bridge, leaning heavily against a rail, a lit cigarette hanging between his fingers.
You all right?
No. I don't mind telling you. I'm not.
His head against his hand and averts his gaze. His eyes are glassy with tears.
You've got to forget all about it.
It's no good worrying about it now. You can't change anything.
There was a submarine there. I'm sure of it. It's where a submarine making an attack would have been. And if it was a submarine, how many more men and ships would it have killed? I had to do it. Anyway, it's all in the report.
It was my fault. I identified it as a submarine. If anyone murdered those men, I did.
Tears roll down the captain's cheek. He looks at Lockhart.
No one murdered them. It's the war. The whole bloody war. We've just got to do these things and say our prayers at the end.
He tries to straighten up, leaning on the rail for support.
Have you been drinking, Number One?
Yes, sir. Yes, I have.
And so have I. First time out of home port since we commissioned.
The captain steadies himself on the rail, flinching slightly with the effort. He turns away.
Good night.
He goes, leaving Lockhart staring down at the deck.
Night.
Lockhart leans on the rail, lost in his thoughts. A noise makes him look up. He finds the captain draped over a chair in his cabin, unconscious.
Sir, you'd better get to bed.
The captain doesn't respond. Lockhart tries to lift him up, but he's a dead weight. He leaves him be.
Poor old devil, you've just about had it, haven't you?
Lockhart heaves the captain round so that at least he's sitting the right way in the chair.
Well, I can't get you to bed, my dear and revered captain. I can at least snug you down for the night.
He loosens the captain's tie.
You're going to have quite a hangover when you wake up. Bless your heart. There we are. Get your legs out straight. That's the best I can do for you.
Lockhart stands in the doorway.
I wish it could be more.
He switches off the light and casts one last look at the sleeping captain.
Good night.
Daytime, the compass roses at sea. On the bridge, Baker chats to Morell.
I didn't think Jupe was such a bad place. I said, you know what a chap there said to me?
Well, what?
Well, I told him we'd been escorting AG-93. He said from what he'd heard, anyone who sailed in that convoy ought to be either dead or round the bend.
Well, he could see you weren't dead.
I'm not round the bend.
Splendid. Aren't you supposed to be doing casualty drill on the two-pounder?
Oh, yes, sir. But, aye, sir.
Captain, sir.
Well, Chief, what is it?
I've got a coupling breaking loose down aft. Broken bolt by the look of it. I'd like to stop and secure it, sir.
You mean you want me to slow down?
If we keep the shaft turning at all, it's liable to crack up. And I can't take the coupling out to replace it unless we stop engines. It's one of those awkward corners, the after coupling, right up inside that land space.
All right, Chief, be as quick as you can.
I'll be that, sir.
Stop engines.
Stop engines.
In the engine room, the pistons slow down. The Compass Rose sits in a calm sea, three crew manning the gun stand looking out. Down in the radar room, the arm on the radar screen sweeps relentlessly round. A seaman keeps his eyes fixed on it. In the bottom of the ship, Watts reaches down and fishes out the damaged coupling. It's coated with oil. He hands it to one of his crew.
Well,
What steps down into the sludge?
I wonder if the hole's damaged.
Saggy didn't say.
Cut that out. Get a spanner, a flogging hammer and a blow lamp. I'm going up to report to the captain.
On the bridge, a seaman sends out a message with a flashlight.
Viper's coming back, sir. Calling.
A ship far off on the horizon flashes a message back.
What is the state of repairs?
Make trouble located, but estimate repairs will take several hours yet.
The captain goes over to Lockhart.
We'd better darken ship now, number one.
Aye, aye, sir.
And have the boat swung out ready for lowering.
Raw flesh is cast off too, sir.
Yep. Reply, sir. Afraid I cannot spare you an escort for the night.
That's quite all right. We'll sleep by ourselves.
Number one, impress on everybody. We mustn't have any unnecessary noise of any kind. No banging about. Could be heard miles away on a night like this.
Aye, sir.
Oh, and we may as well darken caps, too.
Yes.
Reply, sir. I must leave you to your virtuous couch. Good night, fair maiden. Best of luck.
The captain stares out at the darkening sky. The Compass Rose sits in a calm sea. The gently ruffled waves glitter, caught by the moonlight. On the radar screen, the arm swings round and round. On a table, an open notebook sits next to a cup. As the ship gently tips, a pencil rolls. Lockhart patrols the ship. Simpson drops something.
If anyone else makes a noise, I'll have his guts for a necktie.
On the bridge, the captain stares around restlessly. Down in the engine room, Watts, wearing his vest and covered in grease, tightens a nut with a large spanner. On deck, the men stare out into the darkness, their faces anxious and tense. They barely move, leaning on the railings. There's not a breath of wind, nothing moves. The men's heads jerk up at a sudden banging. The captain shifts agitatedly, then turns to Morell.
Look, go down and see Watts. Tell him to stop the hammering or muffle it somehow.
Aye, sir.
Tell him the torpedo will hit him first.
Sir.
The sound of the banging echoes out into the dark water. Morell hurries down to the engine room where Watts and his crew are working.
Come to see the phone, sir. It won't be long now.
Oh, fine, Chief. But the captain's a little worried about the noise. Could you do anything to tone it down a bit?
Pretty well finished now, so we're just flogging up the nuts.
Could you hear the hammering up top?
Hear it? There were U-boats popping up for miles around, complaining about the racket.
Any sign of submarine, sir?
Nothing so far.
If they don't get us now, they never will.
Is that a promise, Chief?
Ferriby lies on his bunk, his eyes open wide, darting from side to side. With a sudden movement, he gets up, picking up his cap, and goes outside. It's morning. Ferriby sits in a corner of the deck, his knees tucked under his chin, his head resting on his hands. Watts, covered in oil, reports to the bridge. The captain takes a cigarette from his mouth and turns expectantly to hear the news.
Ready to move, sir.
Well done, Chief. Wheelhouse?
Sir.
Ring standby, main engine.
Stand by, main engine, sir.
On the deck, the seamen exchange looks as they hear the bell. Ferriby lifts his head from his knees and looks over the side of the ship. Under the ship, the propeller is just visible in the murky water. It starts to turn. The seamen straighten their caps and move to their positions. Ferriby gets to his feet and walks along the deck, staring around him in wonder. He lightly touches the handrail as if he can't believe it's still there. The Compass Rose slowly turns. Under her hull in the murky water, the rudder moves. The radar screen shows nothing, but the seaman keeps his eyes fixed on it. The captain, unshaven and dishevelled, is asleep in his bunk. Lockhart's on the bridge. He goes to the speaking tube.
Bridge's up.
Yes?
We've got the convoy on the radar.
Oh, good. How long before we're in visual touch?
About 3 hours, sir.
Right. Let me know.
The captain replaces the speaking tube and closes his eyes again. In the radar room, the seaman spots something on the screen. He peers closer, then presses a button and picks up a phone.
Radar, bridge.
Bridge? I'm getting a small echo astern of the convoy, sir. Can you see it on the bridge repeater?
Yes, I've got it. What do you make of it?
It's hard to tell, sir. It's small, but it's there all the time, keeping pace with the convoy.
Could it be a back echo off one of the ships?
Don't think so, sir. The angle's wrong for a start.
Well, a straggler, then.
It's a bit small for a ship, sir. Do you see the ship right out to starboard? Probably one of the escorts. That's a lot bigger.
Keep your eye on it. Bridge, sir.
Bridge, sir.
Yeah?
Bearing 330. That makes it about 10 miles astern of the convoy, sir.
Nothing wrong with the set, is there?
No, sir. The set's on the top line.
Have I had an echo like this before?
Not exactly, sir. It's about the size you get from a small boat at that range.
A trawler?
Smaller than that, sir.
The captain stares hard at the tiny speck on the radar screen.
Sound action stations.
Lockhart and the captain go to the bridge.
Pull ahead!
The seamen race up on deck, pulling on their duffel coats. The Compass Rose picks up speed, racing over the waves. The captain talks to the radar operator on the phone.
Report your target.
Bearing 345, range 9,000, sir.
The captain adjusts the sextant, then looks through a pair of binoculars. He sees a U-boat. He lowers the binoculars and steps forward.
Morel!
Sir!
There's a U-boat on the surface, dead ahead.
Panto!
She's out of range at the moment, but I want to get in a couple of shots before she dies, if we can get near enough.
I can see it, sir, dead ahead. Should we send a sighting report, sir?
Yes, take this down. To Admiralty, repeated Viperous. Submarine on surface, 10 miles astern, convoy TG-104, course 345, speed 5 knots. I'm engaging. Crack it on, engine room. There's a U-boat on the surface, dead ahead.
Aye, sir.
Number one, there's a U-boat.
I heard, sir. Too far away from me at the moment.
Yes, we shall need that box of tricks of yours in a minute. You can stand by for the quickest crash dive in history when they see us.
The Compass Rose flies forward. Morel stares ahead expectantly. In the engine room, the pistons pump. In the radar room, the operator's eyes are bulging as he stares at the screen.
Range 8500.
Lockhart comes onto the bridge. He and the captain watch the U-boat through binoculars.
He's behaving exactly according to the book. Trailing the convoy, waiting for darkness.
Range 8,000.
He must see us in a moment.
Morel calls to the bridge.
I think I can reach him now.
4-inch gun bridge.
Yes?
I think I can reach him now, sir.
The captain gives a nod.
Shoot!
There's an eruption of water close to the U-boat. Morel's crew reload the gun.
Fire!
She's venting her tanks.
She's diving, Morel.
Lockhart goes to the ASDIC room.
Sweep from red 2-0 to zero.
Sweep from red 2-0 to zero, sir.
The captain looks through his binoculars. He sees only a trail of foam.
She's down, number one. Echo, sir.
In contact, sir.
Target moving quickly right, sir.
Target moving quickly right. Watch it now.
Aye, sir.
Starboard 15.
Starboard 15, sir.
Come down to 80 revolutions. Setting B for Baker. Stand by.
A seaman and Ferriby each turn a dial.
Baker, set!
You're losing her. Keep on her.
Aye, sir.
Range 300.
Midships.
As the ASDIC operator turns the wheel, the pointer on a dial moves a few degrees along a scale.
Range 200. Range 100.
Instantaneous echo, sir.
The depth charges are rolled out from the stern. Everyone rushes to the railings to watch. As the charges explode, two columns of water surge upward.
Hard a port. Slow ahead.
Hard port, sir.
Lockhart comes to the bridge.
Wheels hard a port, sir.
We must have got her. Get back on the search. We haven't finished yet.
Sweep 60 degrees across the stern.
Sweep 60 degrees across. There she is, sir.
In contact, sir.
Half ahead.
More depth charges the size of large barrels are hoisted up.
E!
Midships.
Midships, sir.
The sea behind the ship is calm. In the ASDIC room.
Target stationary.
Stand by.
Stand by.
Target still stationary, sir.
Instantaneous echo, sir.
The depth charges are dropped. Once again, everyone peers out, hopefully. Again, the sea erupts.
Any minute now?
A seaman looks through a telescope. The sea's bubbling. Then an oil slick appears on the surface.
Oil. Oil, sir!
The captain rushes down to a lower deck to get a closer look. The oil slick is getting bigger, and a section of hull floats to the surface. All the crew now rush to look. Bits of debris bob on the waves. The captain slowly turns his back to the sea. He pushes his cap back on his head and gives a quiet smile. Then he remembers himself and straightens his cap.
Yeoman. Immediate to Admiralty, repeated Viperous.
The Compass Rose comes into dock. The officers in their cabin.
Oh, well, thank goodness that's over. I thought for a while they were going to stay to tea as well. Any coffee, Lou?
Well, here we are, sir.
We have to have a wardroom party to complete the celebrations. Captain D says the Admiral's very keen on parties.
Tomorrow night, sir?
Oh, no. Day after, I should think. You'd better draw up a list of invitations, Morrell.
Aye, sir.
Phone call for you, sir, Mrs. Erickson.
Oh, right. Thank you.
I think my wife will be here by then. Put her down, will you?
Mm. What about yours? I'm afraid she's in her show. Then I must cast an eye round. Meanwhile, I would have got to the signals office.
Oh, I'll do that today, sir. I want some fresh air.
In Liverpool? Did you know about the Commissioned Lovely in Ops, number one?
The Commissioned who?
Commissioned Lovely. That Wren officer. She's got everyone in the ops room tied up in knots.
I don't think it's a Wren who's responsible for that.
What are you doing in ops room? The signal section's miles away.
Just keeping in touch, sir.
Hmm. Well, as it happens, I shall be seeing your prize, Wren. I'm going to Opstrom to find out who's winning the war.
Mm-hmm.
Cough as much as you like. I've got some leeway to make up.
Lockhart walks along a corridor lined with offices. He stops outside one marked OPS-3, Captain B.A. Jones, RN, Second Officer Hallam. He knocks, then opens the door.
Yes. Yes.
Aren's on the phone. She has delicate features and large eyes.
I see. Send it to me, please. Goodbye.
The Wren, Julie Hallam, looks at Lockhart.
Yes?
If it's not illegal, I wanted to have a look at the plot to see what's been going on in Western Approaches.
Well, I'm afraid I can't let you do that. There's a security ban on the whole thing.
I know, but we've been on the Gibraltar run. I wanted to catch up on what's been happening on our old beat.
What ship are you?
Compass Rose.
Oh, yes, you've just got a U-boat.
Does that increase my chances of seeing the plot?
He looks at her hopefully. She meets his gaze and smiles.
I think it guarantees it. I'll take you along.
Captain Erickson's with his officers.
You checked that the date's all right for the Admiral?
Oh, yes, sir.
We seem to know an awful lot of people. Who's Second Officer Hallam?
A glamour pants from Ops.
A what?
A Wren from Operations, sir, the First Lieutenant asked, huh?
Pretty?
Smasher, sir.
I hope you're not weakening, number one.
Not a bit, sir. I thought we ought to have as many people as possible from base. They've been very good to us.
Is Second Officer Hallam in that category?
She hasn't been good to me.
Now, look here.
Sorry, number one. I thought you'd be glad to know.
The part is packed with people. Lockhart's handing round sandwiches. He sees Julie surrounded by the officers. Ferriby's with his wife, a young blonde woman. Ferriby calls Lockhart over.
Oh, Keith. Keith, I want you to meet my wife. Darling, this is Keith Lockhart.
How do you do, Mrs. Ferriby?
I've been looking forward to meeting you so much. Gordon's told me such a lot about you.
Well, he and I are pretty well the oldest inhabitants now. Excuse me, I must go and look after the Admiral.
Oh, yes.
See you later.
An overdressed woman.
I was on an American destroyer the other day and there was only Coca-Cola.
Thanks, Lockhart. Good party.
A new arrival comes over to Lockhart.
Oh, hello there. Sorry, I'm late. One of our Liberty men fell in the drink.
Well, what will you have?
Oh, anything. I say, who's that incredibly good-looking girl over there?
Julie.
I'll get you a glass.
Oh, that's all right, old boy. I'll help myself.
He makes a beeline for Julie. Lockhart peers through the crowd anxiously. Before the other officer reaches her, Julie sees Lockhart, smiles and makes her way over to him. They both squeeze through the tightly packed guests.
Excuse me. As your official escort, I haven't done terribly well, have I?
You've been doing your job as a good First Lieutenant. But I'm afraid I must go now.
Oh. Can't I see you home?
I say, number one, the Admiral hasn't got a drink.
Oh, right.
Rather looks as if you'll be seeing the Admiral home.
Yes, it does. Will you have dinner with me tomorrow?
Yes, all right. Give me a ring at the office. Thank you for the party. Excuse me, please.
She goes. Lockhart stares after her with a smile. He looks down at his drinks tray and sighs. The Compass Rose heads out from the docks. She's at sea with a convoy of ships. Tallow's at a table writing. Watts comes in.
Hi, Jim. How's your talk?
Oh, Bob.
Watts sits down.
560 cans of old Mother Jameson's farmhouse sausages. If they give us any more of that stuff, I'm going to throw it over the side before their eyes. Reckon I get spoiled in old Glad's cooking.
Yeah. It's wonderful what she does with the rations.
Well, only two more days. Told her to have a hot pot ready for us.
Bob. Mm-hmm. I've got something to say.
What's that?
Well, no beating about the bush. You see, she and I... That is... I'm thinking of getting fixed up after the war.
With Glad? That's fine, Jim. The best thing that could happen for her. And for you, too. You've asked her, eh?
Well, sort of. We have an understanding, like. There's only one thing.
What?
Well, she's worried about you. She's been housekeeping for you for a long time.
Oh, forget it. Might get married myself one of these days. Now, you go ahead, Jim. Just name the day, and I'll dance at your wedding.
They raise glasses. The ships plough through a rough sea. In calmer water they pass a buoy. On the bridge of the Compass Rose, the signalman flashes a signal with the lamp. The captain stares out with his binoculars. A heavy cloud of smoke hangs over the docks. The captain turns away, his face grim. Morell's looking out too. Tallow questions him.
What's it like, sir?
Not too good, I'm afraid. It looks as if they've been raided several times.
The docks are barely visible through the dense smoke. Tallow stares out with a worried frown. The captain.
Number one.
Sir?
There'll be a lot of applications for special leave when we get in. You'd better cancel ordinary leave and give it to ratings with homes or relatives ashore here.
Aye, aye, sir.
Watts goes to see Tallow.
Any news, Bob?
No. Tried to phone the pub on the corner. The line's out of order. I'm going ashore to see.
I'd like to come with you.
Yes, Jim. Of course. Come along.
The two men head along the terrace streets. They round a corner and hesitate, their eyes wide with horror. They continue round the corner where only a few houses remain standing. The rest are reduced to rubble. Tallow and Watts stand outside Glad's house. There's no front wall. Instead, there's a pile of broken furniture and bricks. Tallow turns slowly to look at Watts, his face heavy with sadness. Three ARP wardens are having a cup of tea in their office. Tallow and Watts come in.
Look out, lads. The Navy's here. Just in time for a cup of tea. Always glad to see the Navy.
Name of Tallow. 29 Dock Road. What happened?
The warden's smiles fade.
Mr. Tallow, yes. That was your house, wasn't it? A direct hit. I'm very sorry. Very sorry indeed.
The warden takes papers from a drawer.
I reported it to the town hall, of course. Tallow. Yes, here we are. There was only one casualty. Mrs. Bell.
Tallow and Watts lower their eyes.
Didn't they notify you?
We've been at sea. Was she dead?
Yes, I'm afraid so. If there's any help we can give.
When was the funeral?
2 days ago.
There was 21 altogether, all from Dock Road.
It was a bad night, you see.
The mayor and corporation attended. Everything was properly done.
What stare at the warden?
She can't have known anything, Mr. Tallow. It was all over in a second. She can't have suffered at all.
No. I see that.
It's a sort of comfort.
Yes. Thank you.
I'll come back in a day or two.
He looks at Watts and the two men turn slowly away. They walk back along the bombed-out street. Morell's wife, Elaine, sits at a dressing table powdering her immaculately made-up face with a powder puff. She wears a strapless pale silk evening dress and a diamond choker. Her dark hair is stylishly swept back in a chignon. Behind her, Morell is packing a suitcase.
Well, that's that.
Got everything?
Think so. Can't pretend I've made such a good job of it as you would have done, though.
Nonsense, darling. That's a fallacy. Men can pack just as well as women if you're anything to go by.
She has a drink.
Lovely. There's no one can mix a martini like you do.
Let me shake you another.
No, darling, not for me. I'm late already.
She touches up her lipstick.
What are you going to do till it's time for your train?
Oh, get something to eat, I suppose.
Why don't you try that place in Clarges Street? They're open on Sundays.
Darling, can't you put this chap off? Surely if you told him it was the last evening of my leave...
Darling, you know I would if I could, but this is business. He's one of the top producers and he's considering me for a part in his new show.
She picks up a fur stole and Morell drapes it around her.
Well, couldn't he consider you over lunch on a weekday?
Oh, John, really? Must you try to spoil the end of your leave for me?
I'm sorry, darling, it was
I'm going to be terribly late.
Well, I'll phone for a taxi.
No, don't worry, there's a hired car waiting to pick me up downstairs. Goodbye, darling.
She proffers her cheek.
Bye, darling.
Have a nice trip. Heavens, I look a sight. Oh, let me know when you're coming on leave again, won't you?
Yes, I...
Bye, darling.
I will.
Morell stares at the closed door. And picks up the phone.
Hello, Elaine, darling. Haven't you got rid of that clod of a husband yet? We're all waiting to go off to dinner. Hello. Hello, Elaine. Oh, I say, turn that damn thing off, will you? I can't hear a word. Oh, that's better. Hello. Hello!
Morell replaces the receiver. He moves slowly as if in a dream as he picks up his cap and overcoat. He goes to the foot of the bed and picks up his suitcase. He stands looking around the room, taking everything in. With a sudden burst of energy, he marches from the room. Lockhart's with Julie. They kiss passionately.
You know, I'm the man who always thought that in war it was better to be on your own and have nothing to lose.
You still do think it a bit, don't you?
A bit.
They kiss again.
Next time I'm back, let's get away into the country. Forget about the war.
Darling, I'm afraid I have some bad news.
What?
I'm being moved away.
Where to?
I don't know. It may be quite a time before we can see each other again.
Yes.
Can't be helped.
No. In fact, I suppose it's just as well, really.
What do you mean?
Oh, I would only have ended up by asking you to marry me or something foolish like that.
What's foolish about marriage?
Well, it's a mistake to start thinking about permanent things in wartime, isn't it?
I don't know. Do you think so?
Lockhart's face hardens.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Julie lowers her eyes.
It's time I was in.
She heads off along the dark street. Lockhart follows after her. A seaman sounds a whistle on the compass rose.
Hands to station for leaving harbour. Special sea duty men close up.
They sail away from the dock past the buoy. The deck of the ship tips and rolls as she ploughs over the grey waves. A seaman empties some slops over the side. Seen from a distance, the Compass Rose seems a small craft on the open sea. A stretch of land is on the horizon. Down below, Lockhart is plotting their course on a chart.
How are we doing, number one?
About 15 miles astern of the convoy, sir.
Well, I'd like to catch up before midnight if we can. So keep her cracking on.
Aye, sir.
He follows the captain onto the bridge. It's dark.
We always seem to be getting these diversion jobs nowadays, don't we, sir? Sort of compliment, I suppose.
Pretty cold one. Cold night, too.
Coco's just coming up, sir.
The ship lurches, water pours in down below where the men are in their bunks. The captain gets to his feet.
Human!
Sir!
Call Vipers on RT. Plain language.
say torpedoed 15 miles astern of you. Clear away boats and rafts, but wait for the word.
From the speaking tube comes the sound of the drowning men below. The captain stares at the tube, then shuts it off. The yeoman reports.
It's no good! The Arctic master!
A jet of water shoots up through the deck.
She's going down! Engine room?
Sir!
Leave it and come up!
Up you go, lads. We're finished here.
The engine crew climb the ladder.
Is she going down?
Not with me on board. Jump to us.
On another part of the ship, men race up the steps from below, jostling each other.
Well, I felt! I said, well, I felt!
Baker fights his way back down. He's swept away by a torrent of water. The men try to lower a lifeboat.
It's no good, sir! She's fast! It's the lift!
The captain shines his torch on the pulley.
The raft, then! Clear the raft!
He heads for the life raft.
Come on!
Morel goes to the stern of the ship where a man's working by torchlight.
Who's that? Wainwright, sir. I'm ditching the primers.
Oh. Oh, yes, of course.
Don't want to take this lot down, but it's all alive.
Morel works with Wainwright, who continues to whistle cheerfully. The yeoman holding a bag goes to the captain.
Can I ditch the confidential book, sir?
Yes, Colonel.
As the yeoman tosses the bag overboard, the captain clambers to the other side of the bridge.
Coxswain! Sir! Pipe, abandon ship!
Aye, aye, sir!
Abandon ship! Abandon ship!
The life raft is thrown over the side. Some men gather round the captain.
It's a skipper!
What's the chances, sir?
A torrent of water knocks them over. Some depth charges break free and roll along the deck.
Time to go, lads. Good luck to you all.
I'm off.
A man jumps overboard. Tunbridge is attaching a torch to his shoulder.
Come on! Jump!
They all start jumping. Tunbridge finds the life raft. He calls out.
Come on! This way! Raft here, come on!
The men start swimming towards the light of his torch.
Come on, mate! This way!
The captain pushes a man overboard, then calls to another.
Go on, jump!
The man jumps, the captain jumps too. He swims.
The raft! The raft! Make for the raft, boys!
The men struggle to swim.
She's going!
They turn and watch as the Compass Rose tips, her stern lifting high in the air, smoke pouring from her funnel. Slides down into the depths. Bubbles break the surface of the water as the Compass Rose disappears from sight. The men struggle in the water.
Oh God, don't let me go! Let me get hold!
They cling to the side of the raft.
Let me get hold! I haven't got a lifebelt!
You ought to have your lifebelt! Don't you know your standing orders? Here!
Tullow gives up his place on the raft.
Bloody coxswain! Can't he ever give us a break?
Coxswain! Coxswain!
It's all right, sir! I make for the other raft!
He swims away. The men are crammed together on the raft, some hanging onto the sides.
How far from the charting heaven now it be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive them.
At a naval headquarters, a huge wall map shows the position of the Navy's ships. A wren brings a message. An officer reads it. He passes on the news to Julie, who's working there.
Signal from convoy PK-20. One of the escorts has been sunk in her diversion position, 15 miles astern of the convoy.
What ship?
Compass Rose. Pity. She was a good one.
Have they any chance?
If they can stay alive. Viperus won't leave the convoy to look for them before daylight. Do you know somebody in her?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Oh, bad luck.
The officer moves away, leaving Julie staring out. As if in a trance, she continues with her work, handing a note to a typist. A phone buzzes. She answers it.
Yes?
On the wall map, a large pin is put in position with a cross under it. It's placed next to a pin with a tag reading Compass Rose. Out at sea, a cloud passes over, unveiling a full moon. Down below, the huddle of men in the two life rafts are washed a ghostly white by the moonlight. Tallow clings to a piece of wreckage. He raises his eyes to the moon, then allows himself to roll onto his back. He floats, hearing voices from the past.
Bob! How long have you got? Have you had your tea?
What's his floating?
With Glad. That's fine, Jim. Just name the day, and I'll dance at your wedding.
As Morel drifts on the waves, he too hears voices.
Hello, Elaine, darling. Haven't you got rid of that clot of a husband yet? We're all waiting to go out.
Lockhart's clinging to the life raft. The seamen try to rouse a comrade.
Shorty! What's the matter with you? Shorty!
Oh, stop it, will you? Can't you see he's finished?
I've just been talking to him.
That was an hour ago.
Wilson's dead, sir.
Sure?
Yes, sir. Stone cold.
Put him over, then.
They tip the body out of the raft.
Who's going up next? There's only you and Rose, sir.
Rose?
He floats beside Lockhart.
Rose!
Realizing Rose is dead, Lockhart climbs into the raft.
All right.
Ferrib is in the raft, his head lolling to one side as he starts to lose consciousness. Lockhart shakes him.
Ferrib! Wake up! Wake up, damn you!
I'm tired, number one.
I don't care what you are, you're not going to sleep. And that goes for the rest of you. Nobody's going to sleep. Come on, you lazy bastards, wake up! Wake up, that's if you want to live. Come on, I'll make you move about.
Tie
it up! Stop
it! And drown yourself!
I'll drown the lot of you if you don't wake your ideas up. Now, come on, sing! Under the spreading chestnut tree, when I take you on my knee, oh, how happy I shall be.
Ferriby weakly joins in.
Come on, Gracie, lend a hand. If we go to sleep, we've had it. If we can stay awake till morning, we've got a chance.
Come on, sing!
Under the spreading chestnut tree, when I take you on my knee, oh, how happy I shall be. Under the spreading chestnut tree.
Steely grey waves. On board, the men are slumped against each other, either asleep or unconscious. A wooden crate floats past the raft. Lockhart is barely recognisable, his face blackened with smoke and cracked by the wind. He lifts his head and squints out through swollen eyes. He sees the other life raft drifting ahead of them. His eyes open wider and he shakes Gracie.
No going to sleep there! Come on! Let's go and look at the other lot! The sun will be out soon. That's right. Now paddle.
Two of the six of them in the raft hold paddles. They start to inch forward. Lockhart notices Ferriby, who's slumped at the front of the raft.
Gordon! Gordon, back up!
Ferriby opens his eyes.
I'm all right, Keith. If only number one would let me have my wife off to Glasgow.
He turned it down, you know. We can't get rid of him. We can't!
As Ferriby covers his eyes with his blackened hands, the others exchange concerned looks.
Carry on, lad.
The two rafts are small specks on the vast sea. On the other raft, the captain's with five men. They're barely conscious.
All right. Next question. What's a bar shoe? Anyone know? Come on, wake up.
A thing for towing paravanes from.
Right. All applaud. Clap. Clap. Harder.
On Lockhart's raft.
You hear that? They're awake anyway.
They continue to paddle. They catch up with the captain's raft. The captain squints at the other raft. Lockhart paddles with his hand, his eyes locked on the raft ahead.
Hello, number one.
Hello, sir.
The marooned men pull the two rafts together. They sit and wait, some staring out, some with lowered eyes. Around them, the waves continue to rise and fall. Out on the horizon, there's a ship. Piccadilly Circus in London, inside a busy restaurant.
Hi, waiter.
Yes.
Hey, waiter.
Yes.
Hi, waiter.
The elderly waiter ignores the customers and arrives at Lockhart's table.
Just a moment. I'm afraid that water's a bit dusty.
Oh, I'll have it changed immediately, sir. I am so sorry. It's the war, I'm afraid.
Oh, dear. In that case, I don't want to make too much of it.
No, sir. Thank you, sir.
And bring me another large pink gin, please.
Yes, certainly, sir.
Sorry I'm late.
Sir, congratulations.
Oh, thanks. May I take this?
Thank you. I've ordered you a large pink gin.
Oh, well, that'll do for a start.
Thanks.
Did you see Ferriby?
Yes.
I'm afraid he'll be in hospital a very long time. I talked to the M.O. It's a complete breakdown, all right.
Oh. Lockhart lights the captain's cigarette.
Did you go and see Morell's wife?
I've just come from her flat.
How was she?
She was in bed.
Oh. Is she taking it badly?
I think she was taking it very well. I wasn't the only visitor.
He looks meaningfully at Lockhart, who lowers his eyes discreetly.
Damn the war. Yes. I was at the Admiralty yesterday.
Yes, sir. Walter, sir.
The waiter returns.
Right. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Cheers, now then. They are giving me a castle-class frigate. That's the very latest type of escort. They've also given me this and put me in charge of an escort group. And they're giving you a half strike.
Good heavens. Lieutenant Commander, what will they do next?
But there is a snag. I shall be senior officer of the group, so they've agreed I could have a Lieutenant Commander as number one. They said I could have you. I said, I didn't know. You better be clear about this. You could have your own command now if you wanted it, a corvette. But if you stay with me, you may miss getting your own ship. I'd like to have you, of course. But you'll have to make up your own mind. That's up to you.
The captain takes a drink.
Tell me about our new ship, sir.
Waiter.
The new frigate's in dock. It has F-362 painted on her side. A plaque on her hull reads Saltash Castle.
Saltash? Can't say I've ever heard of a castle of that name.
Neither have I. I couldn't even find it on the map.
Well, it's on the map now.
Like a block of flats, isn't she?
I wonder what that funny-looking thing is up there.
Goodness knows. We ought to get a set of the plans and go over the layout.
Well, there's a set in the dock office. Shall I go and get them?
Oh, yes, do that, will you?
The captain stares up at the ship. There's a metal pylon rising up from the deck. The captain goes on board and climbs up onto the bridge. He looks around at everything, familiarizing himself with the layout. His manner suddenly changes and he walks slowly forward, as if in a sacred place. He goes to the front of the bridge, his hand automatically flipping the cover down on a speaking tube. A rag lies across the navigational instruments. He moves it aside and rests his hands on the rail, looking straight ahead, as he was wont to do on the Compass Rose. His body stiffens and he forces himself to look down at another speaking tube connected with the seaman's quarters below.
Vipers of RT! See, torpedoed 15 miles astern of you.
Aye, aye, sir.
Clear away boots and rafts, but wait for the word.
She's going down!
Abandon ship! Abandon ship! Abandon ship!
The captain slams the tube shut, smothering it with his palms. He squeezes his eyes tight shut and lowers his head. He strides across the bridge and meets Lockhart coming up with the rolled-up plans of the Saltash Castle.
Here we are, sir.
All right, number one. Well, let's get on with it. We've a lot of work to do.
He brushes past Lockhart and marches along the deck. Later, Lockhart, with files under his arm, walks along a corridor and knocks at an office door marked Staff Officer Operations. He goes straight in, shutting the door behind him. He looks up and stops in his tracks. His surprised face dissolves into a smile. A rowing boat is pulled up on a grassy riverbank. Lockhart and Julie sit on a rug nearby. Julie wears a pale cotton dress with long sleeves, and Lockhart's in a tweed jacket. He drags on a cigarette. Julie puts the picnic things away.
You must be very fond of Erickson.
I feel I want to finish the war with him and with no one else. David and Jonathan. Does it sound silly?
No. But women don't often have that relationship. And if they do, it's not usually about something important, like running a ship or fighting a war.
It's about the only personal relationship war allows you.
Julie looks at him and her eyes narrow a little.
You got very thin.
That was Compass Rose, mostly. You know, when you lose a ship, it's like losing a bit of yourself. And the funny thing is, you don't realize it at once. At first, it's just a bad dream. When I was in London on leave, I went to one of these concerts at the National Gallery. Suddenly, I found that I was crying. Couldn't stop. People began to look at me, and I had to go out. Then after a while, I felt better, and I found that I could think of Compass Rose and the men who died in her, and the sadness and the waste of it, and not want to cry anymore.
He looks at Julie.
Secrets of a First Lieutenant. Or why I went home to Mum.
You don't have to apologize for being a human being. Somebody had to cry for Compass Rose. Why shouldn't it have been you?
Lockhart stares at her as if seeing her for the first time. He reaches out and takes her hand, grasping it tightly.
We'll be off again in no time at all now. Julie, am I wrong? Is it better to have something to lose?
It's better still to have something to live for.
Lockhart nods and gives a cautious smile.
Yes. I seem to have got things a little muddled, don't I?
A little. Take care of yourself, won't you?
Great care. I always do.
I mean it. You see, I know where you're going.
On the Saltash Castle, a gun's fired.
And so we went to war again. And to the bitterest sector of it, the convoy routes to North Russia.
As the convoy sails, sky is filled with explosions, aircraft fly low, shells are loaded into the guns on board. The sky is almost blotted out by the black gunfire. Relentless gunfire continues lighting up the sky with showers of stars.
Homeward bound from Murmansk, we had bad weather, and as long as that lasted, we were safe from attack.
Great sheets of spray are thrown up around the convoy of ships. The Saltash Castle rocks steeply up and down. She crashes down into a wave, her prow disappearing from view before it rises up again, foam steaming from it.
Then the weather moderated.
A ship is hit, a column of grey smoke rises. On the Saltash Castle, the crew, wearing duffel coats and helmets, race to their positions on deck. The captain runs onto the bridge and takes his position, looking out through his binoculars. He sees the sea erupt with explosions all around a ship. He hears Lockhart calling from the Asdig room.
In contact, sir.
Altering course to bearing, port 10.
In the Asdig room, Lockhart stands over three operators. They're receiving a printed readout on a scroll of paper.
Instantaneous echo, sir.
Fire!
A large button with a white arrow painted on it slowly revolves anti-clockwise. A depth charge is dropped from the stern. The arrow on the button points straight up. Behind the ship, the sea explodes. The captain moves to the other side of the bridge to look. In the Asdig room.
Lost contact, sir.
Lost contact, sir.
Oil, sir!
Checks through his binoculars, an oil slick mushrooms up onto the surface.
Well, let's settle that one's hash.
No wreckage, no woodwork, just oil.
But all the same, sir.
She could have released that oil on purpose. Yeoman, make to pedal. Continue search in your area. Number one, carry out lost contact procedure.
Aye, aye, sir.
I'm going on with the attack.
Nighttime, the Saltash Castle is a black silhouette on a sea which sparkles softly under the subdued light of the moon. The captain sits on the bridge, staring out impatiently. Lockhart opens the door from the Asdig room.
End of sweep, sir. Nothing on the recorder.
Very well. Carry on.
Lockhart returns to the Asdig operators.
Sweep from red 80 to green 80 by echo.
Sweep from red 80 to green 80 by echo.
Transmission interval 2,500 yards.
2,500 yards, sir.
The stern of the ship is covered with ice. The sky has lightened a little. The Asdig operators are still searching.
No contact, sir.
Carry on.
Carry on the sweep.
Carry on the sweep, sir.
She could have been sunk, don't you think, sir?
I wish to heaven you mind your own business and get on with your job.
The captain goes to the bridge and stands rigid, his fist clenched.
Number one.
Lockhart casts a dubious look at the operators and goes out to the bridge.
Sir?
Sorry I said
that. That's all right, sir.
I don't think she was sunk. Not enough evidence for it.
No, sir.
Steer 060.
Steer 060, sir.
It's getting to be a different kind of war, number one.
060, sir.
And the people in it have got different, too.
In what way do you mean, sir?
Oh, at the beginning, there was time for all sorts of things. Understanding people. Making allowances for them. Wondering whether they were happy. Even whether they liked you or not. Now the war doesn't seem to be a matter of feelings anymore. All that finished with Compass Rose. Now it's just a matter of killing the enemy. I suppose you think that's all wrong. And that a man should never allow himself to be dehumanized by war.
Yes, sir.
I thought you were made of sterner stuff. No ties with the shore and all that sort of thing.
So did I. But it's a difficult question, isn't it, sir?
Yeah. After the war, I'll be as sweet as you like to everybody. Including you. Right now, I'm going back on the square search again. We'll keep at action stations, number one.
Aye, aye, sir.
Lockhart goes back to the Asdic room.
Normal sweep. We're doing a box search again.
Normal sweep, sir.
Don't make that filthy noise.
Hollow tooth, sir.
Get on with your work. We better have another brew of cocoa.
Aye, sir.
One of the operators takes off his headset and goes out. Lockhart sits down and takes his place. The Saltash Castle ploughs on. The captain still sits on the bridge. Lockhart emerges wearily from the Asdic room. He yawns and steps heavily up onto the bridge.
Nothing on the recorders, huh?
What about it?
Nothing, sir. Just a routine report. It's the end of another sweep.
What do you mean, another sweep?
Sorry, sir.
Now look here, number...
The captain faces Lockhart angrily, then stops himself. His body seems to deflate and he leaves the bridge, supporting himself on the railing as he goes. The captain's with the MO, who's in his pajamas and dressing gown.
Time you had some sleep, sir.
Yes, I know, Doc. But I've got to stay on that bridge. Can you fix me up with something?
Is it necessary? I don't...
Now, look, don't you start. There's a U-boat here. I know damn well there isn't. I'm going to get her. I want something to keep me awake while I'm doing it.
The MO reaches down into a box.
I'll give you a couple of pills. You'll feel like a spring lamb for about 24 hours. After that, you'll go out like a light and wake up with a hangover.
Is that all?
Probably. No, but it isn't a thing to play with.
I wasn't intending to make a habit of it. This is a special occasion.
He knocks back a pill with a glass of water and puts a second in his mouth.
Bridge, sir.
Yeah?
Petal's got a contact.
He spits the pill out.
Thanks, Doc.
He hands the MO the glass and leaves.
In theory, you ought to lie down for 10 minutes.
The captain goes to the bridge, which is now bathed in sunshine. There are explosions all around.
What revs are we doing?
120, sir.
Starboard 15.
Starboard 15.
Attacking.
Starboard 15, sir.
Pull ahead.
Pull ahead.
Pull ahead, sir.
Midships.
Midships.
Midships, sir.
The Saltash Castle races forward, the Asdic room.
In contact, sir. Bearing 190.
400 yards.
Echo high.
Steer 190.
Steer 190, sir.
She crashes onward.
For 100 yards.
The dial clicks round. The printed readout gets longer. It shows a descending line as the echoes get shorter.
Instantaneous echoes, sir.
Fire!
At the stern of the ship, the sea blasts upwards, forming a wall of spray.
Port 20, slow ahead.
Port 20, slow ahead.
Port 20, slow ahead, sir.
The captain stares out behind the ship. A submarine emerges from the water. It has U-53 written on it. The crew manning the ship's gun are cheering madly. The captain's smile fades and he clenches his jaw. He shouts across to them.
Open fire!
The men obey. Two men appear on top of the submarine. They fire a machine gun at the Saltash Castle.
Cease firing!
captain looks through his binoculars and sees the men from the submarine jumping overboard.
Midships!
The captain goes up onto the bridge and joins Lockhart.
Stand by scrambling nets.
Depth charge crew, stand by scrambling net.
Well, no mistake about that.
No. Sorry, sir.
Oh, that's all right, number one. I was beginning to get a bit doubtful myself. The only thing I'm sorry about is that the doctor talked me into taking some damn pill. Stop engine.
Stop engine.
Stop engine, sir.
They look down at the men struggling in the water.
Number one, this is quite a moment. We've never seen the enemy before.
They walk down two flights of steps to a lower deck where the crew are throwing out ropes and nets to the German crew. They watch as a British seaman pulls up a German and hauls him over the rail. The rescued men lie on the deck. The captain and Lockhart look down at them.
They don't look very different from us, do they?
All right, mate. All right, I got you. All right.
The U-boat sinks slowly beneath the waves.
When you are very tired, even the moment of triumph seems no more than part of the same bad dream. That was the last U-boat we sank. But it wasn't the last U-boat we saw.
Stop operating. Switch off the set and fall out.
This was 1945. The U-boats had had their battle. Though for all the good it had done them, they might have saved themselves the trouble and spared many fine ships and good men.
I wonder how far we've steamed. I added it up for Compass Road. 98,000 miles. I never did for this ship. It seemed unlucky.
They sail past the U-boats.
I wish some of the others could have seen this. Morell, Ferriby.
Yes, they deserved it.
Tallow, Watts, Wells, young Baker.
Who was Wells?
The yeoman in Compass Rose.
Oh, yes. Now's the time you miss them.
You didn't get any medals, number one.
I did do my best for you.
I can bear it.
No, you deserve something.
I've got something to look forward to.
Coming onto the bearing now, sir.
Stop engine.
Stop engine, sir.
Telegraph it stop, sir.
Remember when we had that drink in London, and you said you wanted to stay with me in Saltash?
Yes. That was one of my better decisions.
One of your best, as far as I'm concerned.
Stand by, sir.
Stand by!
Stand by?
On, sir. Let go!
The anchor drops from the prow of the ship and lets down on a chain.
Slow stern.
Slow stern, sir. Telegraph it slow stern, sir.
And we only sank two U-boats.
Stop engine.
Stop engine, sir.
Two in 5 years.
It seemed a lot at the time.
Telegraph it stop, sir.
Yeah.
Got a cable, sir.
Finished with main engine.
Finished with main engine, sir.
The captain leaves the bridge. Lockhart stands looking out. He lights a cigarette. The Saltash Castle is peacefully moored in calm waters. The sun's setting and a strip of land is visible on the horizon behind her. The end. Audio description by ITFC. The producers acknowledge with gratitude the cooperation of the Admiralty.